Blog Talk Radio.
Appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services, by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems with life or you're having any problems in the next, breaking through that next level in sports, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. Make an appointment at her office at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, Z, it's good to have you back.
It's wonderful to be back. Wonderful to be back.
And I wish you a lot of luck with all that snow up there. I certainly don't miss it.
Well, it's trying to go away, but then it freezes at night. So
yeah, that's One thing I always worried about was black ice, especially when the kids were out driving around. But we had a little bit of an upset last week, huh?
We had some wonderful, wonderful fights last week.
Yeah.
The story is the big heavyweight fight between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, which turned out to be a tremendous, tremendous fight. Both guys showed toughness. Both guys showed skill. And Deontay won by stoppage. It was a good fight, and you saw stuff from both guys that, I mean, we knew Luis Ortiz could box, but he showed. I mean, he's very, very skillful, talented, and he's tough. Unfortunately, he's not tough enough to take Deontay's power. Let me tell you, that one shot that Deontay has is becoming historic. I mean, the guy he's cleanly getting outboxed. But I mean, he dropped Ortiz early. I think it was the second round. Ortiz, he weathered that storm. He came back and came back to hurt Wilder. And he hit Wilder with some shots that in my opinion would have stopped anybody. Wilder took it. He stood on his feet. He held on. Then he delivered his knockout shot. Really, Ortiz was coming forward. Deontay was back against the ropes, and it's kind of similar to the shot he caught was Arthur Spilker. Ortiz sort of lunged in. He was doing a very good job of not lunging in. He stayed behind his feet. He stayed patient all fight long. His jab looked good. He was out jabbing Deontay. He landed very good to the body. At times, he cut the ring off. With that said, the shot I'm going to say that started the beginning of the ending was when Deontay was kind of bouncing back to the ropes. Ortiz came in, kind of lunged low, threw a shot, and Deontay just kind of planted his feet and hurry up and threw. I'm not sure if it was a straight right or a right hook, but it was kind of short, and it caught Ortiz right on the button coming forward. That kind of started everything.
Deontay, before the fight, the big money was on Ortiz. They weren't sure how far Deontay Wilder was going to go against the and Ortiz did come in 15 pounds heavier.
More. Deontay came in at 214. He's 6'7", and he looked good, but that's relatively light for a 6'7" guy, especially Ortiz coming in like around 145, 140 plus, and taking shots from body shots from a guy like that. I mean, Deontay's tough. He showed me. I was impressed with both guys, but Deontay showed me that he was tough enough to take a true heavyweight's punch, a true heavyweight's good punch. With that said, Ortiz showed me he was tough enough because he kept getting up from the Deontay shot. These are shots that have guys twitching on the ground after they're getting caught. They, you know, they can't control their bodies. They don't know what's going on. Ortiz, he kept getting up. Even the uppercut where, the ref stopped the fight, rightfully so. Ortiz was on his, basically on his hands and knees, just kind of out of it. The guy is tremendously tough, but as I said, Deontay, something in that right hand he's working with is historic lightning.
After the fight, it was interesting that Deontay didn't waste any time in calling out his next opponent. He wants Anthony Joshua.
That's where the money is. And Deontay, from what I heard, he made Anthony Joshua in his last fight, or in his fight against Klitschko, made $18 million, if I'm correct. Around there. Deontay Wilder only made $2 million for this fight.
Right.
So if anybody he needs to be calling out, it needs to be Anthony Joshua. afterward. If anywhere he wants that fight to happen, it's in Wembley Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the paper, the gate money, the pay-per-view money. I mean, he has to call out the money. And right now,
sure.
Deontay has proven that. I mean, he's that guy. I mean, between
mm-hmm.
him and Joshua, if Joshua still has something to prove against Joseph Parker, Deontay passed his test.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna have to see what Joshua can go ahead and beat Parker. Then we can
mm-hmm.
have something lined up.
Mm-hmm. We know.
But we had some other great fights on.
Oh yeah.
Last
go
week.
Ahead.
Last week. Sullivan Barrera again.
Right.
Yeah. He put up a good fight. The guy's name just lost my head. But I've been railing about the guy. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was he took Sullivan Barrera apart. He ended up stopping
right.
Sullivan Barrera. But he put on a very good boxing display, and Sullivan looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Sullivan looked real good, but he just couldn't stop. I mean, the guy, he kept going, working the body, head, his footwork looked good. He was in and out. I thought Sullivan could have come forward a bit more. I thought he could have
mm-hmm.
applied his, because Sullivan was bigger as far as weight.
Right.
I thought Sullivan could maybe. You know, the guy was too sharp for Sullivan. He was too sharp. So I thought Sullivan could go ahead and maybe press the action a little more, try to back the guy up, make the guy use his feet a little bit more. But I understand that when a guy is that sharp, it's hard to always, you know, come forward. But if you're not beating him one way, you're going to have to do it another way.
Okay, just going back through my notes from last week to see if I can pick up the name.
I talked about him all last week. Bivol. Dmitry Bivol.
You're right.
Bivol. Dmitry Bivol. Oh, man. But, yeah, Bivol, he put on a tremendous, tremendous display. And he fought the best Sullivan I've seen in quite some that I fought. He fought
mm-hmm.
the best Sullivan. Sullivan looked sharp. He looked quicker, not as methodical. He had his game plan going. It just boiled down to the Bivol was just he's that level. He's that guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised that he stopped Sullivan. I thought that maybe he would beat Sullivan, outpoint Sullivan. I thought Sullivan would make the fight a little rougher, a little sloppier. Bivol took some good shots. But he kept the pace going and he stopped Sullivan.
Right.
So after that fight, it was the Kovalev fight.
Right.
I mean, I forgot the guy who Kovalev fought, but Kovalev did well. He showed a very good puncher, Ray. More left hooks. He was a little more settled for the left hook. Worked the left hand very well. With that said, we still need to see, you know, who's going to be at the top of this light heavyweight division now that Andre Ward is gone.
Right now we
have a few guys.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, Adonis Stevens is not he's set to fight Badu Jack. It's about time, but Adonis Stevens fought somebody.
Mm-hmm. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah, and then I mean outside of Fonfara, I mean, he hasn't really fought anybody.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, I mean, anybody of name, anybody of, you know, of that level. So
right.
I'm glad he's stepping up. And that is a very interesting fight, intriguing fight right now on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have Kovalev still on top. We have Bivol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Barambiov, who's coming off of injury, who's supposed to be coming back up. So
mm-hmm.
we have some, I mean, light heavyweight division still doesn't have that one guy.
Yeah. You know, the other guy that hasn't fought in a while and is finally coming back is Ursulandi Lara. He's going to be back in the ring on the 7th of April against Swift
Jared Hurd. Yeah.
That's going to be another showtime.
Yeah, Jared Hurd, I do not know how this guy tips the scales at 154 at any time.
Right.
This is a huge guy. He looks like he'd be huge for middleweight. Jared Hurd is just, I mean, he's exceptionally a big guy. I saw him stand against people who are pretty good size, 154-pound people, and he dwarfs them. So he's a guy, he has one gear, and he's not the fastest guy, but he will smoothly hurt you. He throws hard. He's a heavy guy. He throws heavy punches. And in a fight like against Austin Trout clearly outboxing him, but just couldn't keep the guy off him. Had nothing to keep the guy off. Nothing to keep Hurd off. Hurd will keep working. He's not a guy who's going to, you know, run up and down the ring and exert pounds of energy. He's just going to keep stepping to you, keep the pressure on, and just keep hitting you. And he's generally going to take what you have and hit you harder. He works the body. He works the head. With that said, Islam De Lura is the master boxer of that division. He's a master boxer of any division. He is a guy that if anybody has the medicine to cure what Hurd has, it's Lura. It right now it depends on what has age caught up to Lura. Is Lura going to still be that guy who can move around for all 12 rounds, or else until he, goodness, if he can, stops her, can he move around for that long? As of late, Lura, he has a tendency to start out his fights, or to even fight a lot of his moments during fights flat-footed and in the pocket. This is a guy you don't want to do that with. I don't care if you're blocking his shots. That's going to affect you. So Laura's going to have to use his feet. He's very capable. He's actually one of the better people of using his feet. The guy's a master boxer. With that said, I mean, it's all about can he do that 12 rounds, or does he have anything to slow Hurd down? If he doesn't, it's going to be a very, very intriguing fight. If he does, it's still going to be an intriguing fight, but, I mean, Hurd has never seen anything like Lura. He's never seen anything like that. Does Lura still have what it takes to go ahead and school Hurd? Because during moments of this, unless he gets totally blown out, he's going to be schooling Hurd. He schooled Austin Trout, who boxing-wise schooled Hurd. Lura and Trout are both southpaws, but they both were schooling Hurd. Trout was schooling Hurd. I don't see why Lura cannot. But for 12 rounds, I against a guy that big and you're not, you know, in your age prime, that could be a problem.
Sure. And you get dust because you haven't been fighting in a while. So can you get back in with the intensity that he went out with?
Yeah, because Jared Hurd, he's right now, he's hungry, he's just coming off the Austin Trout stoppage. I mean, and that's a good, fight before to fight. Lura is an Austin Trout fight. And poor Austin Trout's been fighting bigger guys. I mean, ever since he almost, like, he beat Cotto, it seems like he's just fighting, and Canelo, he's fighting bigger guys.
Right.
So.
Hey, what do you think about the Mikey Garcia fight tonight? According to the line coming off, he's a 20-1 favorite over, how do you say that, Lipinets?
Lipinets is a good fighter. He's a good fighter. With that said, Mikey Garcia is elite.
Mm-hmm.
He's an elite fighter. He beat Salido. Then he went ahead and had a nice big layoff, came back and beat Adrian Broome, a different weight class. So, I mean, this guy right now, he's elite. There's talk about him fighting Lomachenko. Lomachenko moving up and fighting Mikey Garcia. I would love to see that fight. Oscar Lomachenko would go ahead and fight Jorge Linares. I would like to see that fight first. But Mikey Garcia should be able to handle Litmus. Break him down, should I say. Litmus is a good boxer. But Mikey, he can handle sluggers and break down boxers. Mikey, he's a very technical guy who works. He has a very good jab. He'll work the body. Not an inside fighter. Not necessarily an outside fighter. Mikey will change the range. He can fight anywhere. But what he likes to do, he likes to set the pace. He likes to change range. He likes you to be where he wants you to be. With that said, if Lipnitz, I mean, it's maybe not exactly what he wants to do, but if he could go ahead and, I'm going to say, pressure Mikey wisely, I mean, not exactly, you know, draw all-out pressure, but behind a good jab, behind good boxing, but just make Mikey work and not make Mikey work going forward comfortably. Make Mikey have to adjust. Make Mikey have to move his feet laterally, backwards. Just make him have to all react more than he can set the pace. Because Mikey is great at setting the pace. Great. That's why I thought that he would give Adrian Broner problems. Because, I mean, Adrian Broner, he waits for the guy to set the pace. Where Mikey, that's all he wants to do. With that said, you don't let Mikey set the pace. You don't let him always get off first. You don't let him look to see how to destroy you. You have to kind of start with Mikey.
Yeah.
It's better said than done, and everybody can do it. I don't think Litmus can do it. But, I mean, he's a good fighter, and this could be a good fight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of people were saying that Lipnitz is overreaching on this fight, that it's going to be just a smoothie out for Garcia. What do you think about that?
Could be. But, as I say, he's not overreaching. This, you get an opportunity like this, you take it.
Oh, hell yeah.
If he beats Mikey Garcia or he looks good losing, his opportunity skyrockets. I mean, you have to take this. But, with that said, I mean, I don't think he's on Mikey's level. To be honest, I think few around that weight class are on Mikey's level. You start moving up in weight, who knows? But right now, where is Mikey? 135? Around that 135, it depends, you know, who he fights, maybe even 140-ish area. If his body's going to do that, the guy is one of those guys. He's one of those guys that you have to look out for. I think he's too big right now for Lomachenko. Too big with those fundamentals.
That's going to be something to watch. Let's see if they can get it together.
Yeah, they sign it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's try and get the good doctor on.
Hey.
Let's see here. Oop, come on. This could be easy.
Hello?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Frank, how are you?
We're doing good.
You guys on?
Yes, sir.
I was running up the steps to get my cell phone, and I didn't get up in time, and I was waiting for you. I tried calling you back. All right, put me on. I'm here.
Yep, we're on. We're on with Zito and I, and we just talked about the what was your thoughts on the Deontay Wilder fight last week?
Oh, it was good. A good fight.
Mm-hmm.
Showed a lot, you know. Wilder can take a punch. He definitely can take a punch, no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, more than one. More than one.
Yeah. And Z also was talking about, we were talking that after the fight, Deontay called out Joshua. And he said what he thought was a good payday for him because of the large amount of money that Joshua made on his last fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll get him out. He's not gonna make any money fighting in this country, fighting the mediocre opponents. He realizes it, and I think he got a lot more confidence now. You know, he got hit and he won, and he won He won big, and I was pretty impressed by Ortiz. He gave a great performance. I don't think he was in top shape, though. I just don't think he was in top shape. I felt like he ran out of gas a little bit near the end. But he put up a great fight, and, you know, that's all you could expect. I mean, he got stung, you know, and he got hit pretty good. So one of them's going to go. You know, those guys are too big to absorb too many punches, you know. But I was impressed with both guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see where he's anxious now to get a big fight. But
sure.
I think, to be honest with you, I think the other guy's too big, too strong.
Mm-hmm.
I would put my money on the other guy right now, on the Englishman. Yeah, I think I would.
What do you think, Z?
It's funny because I see exactly what you say. I mean, the only thing is I would put my money on Wilder. It's just in fighting, you have a guy. I mean, to me, I saw kind of everything I needed to see as far as Wilder beating Joshua right now. Joshua isn't the boxer Ortiz is, offensively or defensively. Ortiz still kind of a one-handed bandit. He hurt Wilder with a right hook, which surprised me, him being a southpaw. But really hurt Wilder. That was a shot that really had Wilder hurt, was a nice short right hook. That said, Joshua doesn't take those shots. Anthony Joshua does not take those shots from Luis Ortiz. He's also not, I don't see him outboxing Wilder as clean as Ortiz was. Now, I can see him outboxing Wilder because Wilder will give up rounds. Wilder will give up rounds looking. He'll give up rounds, you know, hunting, pecking, to try to get that shot in. And he'll lull you to sleep to get the shot in. You'll be half asleep because he doesn't throw anything. Next thing you know, quick and hard, boom. You know, the guy gets hit. Two things I'm convinced in any fight, when you kind of have guys who can reach each other, because I don't think Joshua or Wilder could stop, you know, defensively could stop each other from touching each other's chin or body, really. When it comes to that, you go to two things, who could take the shot and who could give the shot. And that, to me, is clearly Deontay Wilder. Clearly. His right hand is beginning to become historic. Not saying that it is just because his delivery system isn't conventionally all there. But the guy, he has a knack for getting it there. And as he said after the fight, every opponent that he saw has been on his ass. And that, I mean, he's moving up his level of his competition, mm-hmm. as it climbs up, they keep falling on their ass. So, I mean, I can't, it's kind of like, I can see all of the reasons to bet against him. I mean, he's not a conventional boxer, and he will lose a 12-round conventional fight, a boxing match, if it lasts 12 rounds against him. It's something that he sees, though. It's something in everybody during the fight that he sees to where it's like, all right, there it is. If I could get it in there, let me play this game so they don't think. It's something that he sees. It's something that he does to where he can get the kill shot in. And he has the kill shot. Everybody that he sees, he hits him with the kill shot. Hard to bet against that, especially when I've seen him hit with the kill shot and he didn't get killed. A couple of them. Ortiz got him hurt and started unloading on him.
Yeah, I can see your point. You know, as far as it goes, probably right now it looks like Wilder could take a good shot, a better shot maybe, and come back. But the other guy did the same thing. I mean, that right hand that Klitschko hit him with dropped him right dead in his tracks. You know, when he did get up, he showed some resilience, and he got up, and, you know, he won the fight. very similar to the was a very similar to this fight. Both, you know, when it boils down to heavyweights, who gets hit first?
Yeah.
You know, most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are big. They threw some bombs. I mean, both of them throw bombs. And I think that there's no question Wilder's jab is better. And when he's at 218, he can move a little better. His only flaw is when he stings you, he runs in like he's, you know, running after a, you know, a chicken or something, like he wants to eat it or something, like, you know, like he's hungry, you know, like he's running after a meal, you know. But other than that, what the hell, he's got to learn, you know. He's like excited, like almost, oh boy, I hit him, I knocked him, I better get on him right now. He doesn't have that. I think the finishing touch is how to finish a guy. And he gets crazy. He swings like crazy. But he held up strength-wise and conditioning-wise. Maybe 218 is a good, 220 is a good weight for him. I don't know. You know, I don't know. He looks heavier than that to me. You know?
He's a tall guy. He's 6'7", like maybe 6'6", and 3/4, but 6'7", essentially.
Yeah, 6'7", basically,
With a long reach. Now, to be 6'7", and he weighed in 214 for the Ortiz fight. You're talking small forward. You're talking literally a small forward. A guy who you think about Ortiz weighing 245. He's hitting Deontay with straight left from himself, or straight left to the body. That weight difference to be getting hit clean like that, that means something. So, he hit Deontay off. He was outboxing Deontay. Patiently, he was patient. He landed the shots. He had a pretty good connect percentage. Deontay is tough and in tremendous, tremendous condition. That's another advantage I would give him over Joshua. Conditioning. I've seen Deontay fight several times. I've seen him fight maybe seven. He doesn't go too long. When he does, he's moving around and he's not breathing heavy. He doesn't throw a lot of punches, but the ones he does, throws a pretty good jab. And I think his jab was offset, especially with Ortiz this fight, because of the southpaw. Ortiz has a very good jab as it is, and he's a southpaw. I think Joshua, you're right. Deontay has a better jab than Joshua. Although if they fought, Joshua might land his jab more. I mean, just because Deontay, he fights, he's very awkward. He has his own sort of timing, his own sort of rhythm, his own sort of herky jerkiness, to where you don't know when things are coming all the time with him. And as you said, he'll come wild when he hits you. Usually, that's because you're stumped. So you're not, you know, you're dazed because he hits you with something good. You're right. His follow-up becomes, he'll get off balance. He'll slap a lot, he'll wing shots. With that said, he gets away with it because you're dazed off of the one good one that he threw. But, as I said, I'm impressed with him. But really, I see the advantage over him and over Joshua, but before I could even go too deep into it, I have to see Joshua against Parker. Joshua might just impress me just as much.
Yeah, it's his turn now. It's his turn now to impress everybody and turn the tables, you know, in his behalf, you know, so to speak. But both guys are big. Both guys could punch. I mean, this is one of those heavyweight fights where it's a matter of who tags who first and then gets an advantage. The first staggering of either opponent might be the end of them, because both of those guys hit too damn hard. You know, after Wilder runs in there. You know, he really goes after his man. He's just not a great finisher, because it looks like to me he tires himself out when he does that. There's a million uppercuts and slapping and, you know, just trying to knock the guy out. It looked like to me he got tired. I thought he was arm weary, but he didn't. He didn't get arm weary. Came out the next round and then. you know. So yeah, we'll see.
He didn't throw a lot of punches. He went wild. I mean, the times that he buzzed Ortiz, he went wild. But just for the course of the fight, he didn't throw a lot of punches. He did more moving than anything. Couldn't really get his jab off too much because Ortiz, you know, was winning the battle with a jab. You can jab with a guy sometimes unless that guy's jab is just totally nullifying what you're doing, especially from a different stance. So, I mean, but one thing he was doing, he was getting Ortiz's timing down. Ortiz was doing a very good job of mixing things up, of being patient, not rushing in, throwing selective punches, feinting. He did a wonderful job of playing chess. It just didn't end as chess does. As simple as that. When a guy could hit you and knock you out, that changes the chess game.
Yeah, it was a hell of a fight. I watched it over again a couple of times, and pretty, you know. I thought Ortiz ran out of gas a little bit. He looked like he was really 40 years old and older. He looked like, to me, he ran out of gas. He was in there, and it wasn't as though it was. Huh? Yeah, I think he was too heavy for that fight. Maybe come in a little lighter. He could have moved better. You know, that's the only thing, the only criticism I have, is maybe he could have come in a little better shape. But, you know.
Yeah, Ortiz came in, I think, one of his lighter weights. I'm not going to say the lightest he's ever. I think he came in because he was coming in like the 250, high 250s, if I'm correct, almost 260s. He came in, I think, 240, around 245. Now, heavyweights don't rehydrate. They don't rehydrate. When Deontay came in 214, I was thinking, I mean, I guess stupid love. Is this guy going to rehydrate? just off of weight? You know, are you coming in that small? But, I mean, it was effective. And to be 214 and to still hit like that, I mean, again, he has technique. That right is something. Sort of, he throws his body into it awkwardly, but it's so darn effective.
Tall, skinny guys like fight like that. Their right hand is like a damn arrow. He reminded me of a little bit of Tommy Hearns' right hand there for a while.
Yeah.
He throws that damn thing in there like a bullet, you know?
Yeah.
And Ortiz, you know, a different angle. Yeah, he throws it a little bit like a right hook almost, you know,
yeah.
At times. You know what? It's the talents are so close together. You don't know who, you know, when you think about it, when I say I put my money, I wouldn't be surprised if the fight went off even money, based on what the hell he does against in his next fight. You know,
yeah.
We'll see what happens against Parker, and then we'll go from there. You know, more or less going to have to give each guy his chance. Then there'll be a lot of comparisons, a lot of this, a lot of that. You know, and people might change their mind. You know. One of those things. But I haven't seen Parker fight that often. I haven't seen him fight that often. I don't really have a good feeling about Parker. I don't know what the hell he's got and what he doesn't have. You'll find out. We'll find out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Parker he's a solid guy. He's a very solid fighter. He's a solid fighter. Yeah, still, he's a very fluid. He's a fluid boxer, a workhorse, and those are pretty tough. I mean, he has a. I mean, we have to get to see him up against upper level competition, but he's pretty tough from what we see. He's a guy to where if Joshua stops him, then I would be pretty impressed. Meaning that even if Joshua got tired. I mean, even if he didn't help do anything with his conditioning, but he still stopped Parker, I would be impressed. For the simple fact that Parker's a guy who's, I mean, he's not if it comes down to it, I can see him just fighting a fight of survival against Joshua and being effectively surviving, maybe losing the fight widely, but effectively surviving because he has those kind of skills. He also has those kind of skills to where if he has opportunity, he's going to take it. He's going to take it, and not saying that he's going to knock Joshua out, but if he sees areas to where he can start taking advantage of him, he's going to take advantage of him. And I see a lot of that. The problem with that fight is size. It's size. You're fighting a pretty good technical guy who's getting better every fight technically, who's fought Klitschko already, so that gives him worlds of experience there. You're fighting him, and he's the bigger guy. It's hard to go against him just off of that.
Let me ask you a question about tonight's fight. You got Andy Ruiz going in tonight against Devin Vargas. What do you think of that one, Chris?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. Vargas isn't my favorite fighter. There's so many great fighters out there. I've been watching. I'm getting mixed up sometimes on who the hell's who anymore. You know, there's so many Vargases and Ortizes and whatnot. If it wasn't for the reruns, I wouldn't know who the hell was who. I watch all the reruns. That's how I differentiate these guys. But I'm not a Vargas fan. I'd have to say that I'm not really 100% on just how good he is or how bad he is. I don't know a hell of a lot about him. Who was his last fight with?
I'll have to go back and look.
I'm trying to remember because I'm just trying to remember who his last fight was against. I'm pretty sure I saw it.
But speaking of Vargas, if I'm correct, I remember it was Adrian Broner slated to fight Figueroa, and from what I heard, Figueroa pulled out, and I think AJ is slated to fight Jesse Vargas. If that's Adrian Broner.
Yes, his last fight was against a guy by the name of Galen Brown.
Yeah, that doesn't ring a bell with me, his last fight.
Before that, he had Dominic Brazil and Tommy Washington Jr. before that.
I've seen Brazil fight, but I didn't see him against Vargas.
Vargas is 20-0 with 4 knockouts.
That's what I thought. You know, that gives me what I don't think he's a hard puncher. I don't think he's a hard puncher. He only had 4 knockouts, you said?
Yeah.
Geez, that's a light puncher in that division, you know? And with today's promoter fights, you know how they throw you a lot of secondary fighters in there. You ought to knock more than 4 guys out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably might be too light a puncher. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I know one thing. I saw a guy I liked, Progress. He's a left-hander, lightweight. Oh, man, I saw two. Oh, great fighter. Great fighter. Remind me of Pernell Whitaker. That's how good I think he is. So, but like I said, every once in a while a guy hits me, and I'll remember his name because he impresses me, but I don't remember being impressed by Vargas. I saw him fight once in California, and that's a long time ago, you know, that I saw that fight. So I'm really, Zito probably knows more about it, about Vargas than I do, you know, about the other opponent. How's his other opponent? How's the opponent? What's he fight like? Who's he beat?
I'm not familiar. I apologize. I'm not familiar with Vargas. I'm really trying to think.
Yeah, that's the same here. Neither one of those guys are.
Except for Brazil, he's the only
household.
Brazil's the only name that that rings a bell with me.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure I saw the fight. So if I saw him, I would remember. I just don't remember him off the top of the head.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, the other fight tonight is Oscar Valdez against Scott Quigg.
I like Scott Quigg. Oscar Valdez is going to – now, this is going to be a good fight. It should be a good fight. I mean, it's hard to pick who's going to win just because these guys – I mean, Quigg, he's quick. He comes to fight. But so does Valdez. Yeah, I mean, he comes to fight too. So, I mean, it, when it comes down to these guys, they're lighter guys, they're fast. It's all about can you stick with your game plan. Is your game plan going to work, and can you stick with it? I think Quigg is more talented. I would slightly go for him. But it's all, I mean, you know, it's all sorts of variables.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what do you think?
Again, you can't get much out of me on this because I'm not really, I haven't seen enough of either one of them to develop an opinion about it, you know? You know, with all these other fights coming up, I've been excited to see them. You know, Christ, you got Triple G, you got the heavyweight fight tonight. You know, you got some great fights coming up. So I kind of these kind of you know they're throwing these in you know like in between the big ones. You know, so
yeah.
I'm not really familiar with you know now Zito probably is, but. Thank God for the reruns. I watch the reruns every night almost. I turn them on, and I get a chance, really, to see some of the guys that I don't normally see. And they started heavily advertising the Triple G fight this week. You know, usually you don't see a hell of a lot about it, but they're really pushing that fight. You know?
Oh, Dr. Have you heard Canelo got they got caught with tainted substance in the system.
Yeah.
Said it was from the, well, he said it's from the Mexican cows eating Mexican beef. There were cases reported of that with boxers. There are cases reported of that with Mexico, in Mexico, that there was tainted meat with this sort of banning substance in it. So, I mean, that's how the story goes. There, we're still. I haven't heard if they're going to postpone the fight or anything like that. I don't think they are. But
not. They said last night they're going to let it go through.
Okay,
there was a little. They said they're going to let it go through. It wasn't that big a deal.
There was
Triple G
going,
wants to get it on regardless. You know.
Yeah.
That's the money. That's the money.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants the money, and he not worried about a little. Hormone from eating a Mexican cow, you know, or Mexican whatever he ate. But you got, you know, what? It just amazes me that these guys are so stupid to do something like that and blow a giant payday. I mean, do they think it's giving them an edge? You know, it's so goddamn dumb. You know, I just don't understand it. How the hell can you go? I mean, knowing how they test, you know. These Olympic tests these tests they have now, they can detect in an Olympic-sized swimming pool a teaspoonful of the drug. They could find it. You just can't get away with taking the damn thing, you know. And first of all, I think I'd get his trainer and hit him with a 2x4 because he must know what he's eating. You know what I mean? That's just to get his attention, you know. What the hell are you doing, guys? You know, Jesus, God, that irritates the hell out of me when somebody does something so dumb. You know, they're going to, you know, you can't do it. The Olympic testing is unbelievable. And they have, you know, they have the same. The fight game has the same way. They just get a blood lab and say, okay, find something. And here comes a hormone or something, which isn't going to do him any damn good. He's not going to be any bigger. He's not going to be stronger. Not going to have more stamina because of it. I don't know of one drug that he could take that's going to make him a better fighter. That's how I, you know. And the same with Triple G. What in the hell? What would you take? if you take steroids, you gain weight, and you get a lot of fluid in you. That's no good, and that's easily detectable. And that's only if you're a football player, you know, and you're not getting weighed in. But, I mean, there's no good supplements out there that help out. I mean, it's just dumb, you know? So, it's a damn shame. I just thought that, you know, Golden Boy would have better sense, you know, than to let him do something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're weak of a fight. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I mean, it is just stupid.
Before you came on tonight, we also talked about Ursulanda Laura coming back into the ring on the 4th of April against Jarrett Hurd. And it's going to be on Showtime. Do you have any idea on that, Chris?
Well, I know what Laura is. I've seen him a million times. You know, I've seen Hurd once or twice. But I think Lara's a great boxer. Like, yeah, he's a combination. I think he's a good boxer puncher, excellent. So, but Hurd can give him a fight. You know, I don't know how good a one he's going to give him. But right now, I'd have to pick Lara. You know, from what I know of him, and against top opposition too. I mean, he's performed well against top opposition. So,
yeah.
You know.
I'm with you with that, Dr. Chris, except for Hurd is a very big guy. Hurd, as I said, he looks like he would be big for middleweight. So I don't see how he makes 154. I don't, like, literally I would have to see him on the scale and know that the scale's not rigged to make 154.
Yeah.
Just because I see this guy during weigh-ins, and it's like this guy's huge. You see him standing next to Laura, it looks like he's fighting his child. It's kind of, I mean, the size differential is ridiculous. Hurd stopped Austin Trout's last fight. That, I mean, he's a big guy who he doesn't rush. He'll smoothly walk you down or cut it off sometimes, and he'll let his punches go. You'll hit him. He's big. He can take it. And he'll let him go. He'll hit you to the body. He's not the fastest guy, but he works. He doesn't have that urgent work rate where he's going to burn himself out. He'll just smoothly work. With that said, that's the kind of guy that could give Laura could easily outbox, or he could give Laura all sorts of trouble. Just because, mm-hmm. I remember when Laura fought Angulo, and Laura stopped Angulo. He displaced his orbital bone, but he had to. Like, Angulo made him do that just the way Angulo was fighting. Knocked Laura down twice. Just was putting the pressure on Laura. Made Laura extremely uncomfortable. Walked through everything Laura was doing. This Hurd can be that kind of guy. Not as relentless, not as balls out with his pressure, but he's just going to always be there, always punching. And, I mean, Laura, I can see Laura staring him. I can see Laura outboxing him from the outside. But I can also see Laura's age catching up to him as Hurd is on him little by little and Laura not moving as much and the fight just kind of turning Hurd's way. With that said, it's hard to see anybody getting to Laura when he's right. If he still has what he needs, it's hard to pick against him.
Yeah, he's tough. You know what? It amazes me. When you look at two different fighters, they both weigh the same weight, and you go, what in the hell scale is he getting on? You know, I'm that way. You know?
Yeah.
I want to get weighed on his scale. You know what I mean? Holy Jesus. These guys look like monsters alongside the opponents. Their heads are bigger. Their shoulders are bigger. Their chests are thicker. The arms are bigger, and yet they weigh the same weight. I can't judge a guy by looking at him what he weighs. I remember when Sugar Ray went over to Europe on a tour, and he got beat by Randy Turpin. And everybody said, how the hell did Sugar Ray lose? And blah, blah. Well, when I saw Turpin, I thought it was a full-blown light heavyweight. He was the biggest middleweight I ever saw. And Eduardo Lousay was another one. I want to know how he packed 160 pounds, you know, into this body that he had. And you know, some of these guys are just big. I don't know. Maybe their bones are light. I don't know. I don't know how the hell they get away what they do. You know?
Yeah, maybe they're hollow or something.
Yeah, they got hollow bones or something. I don't know, but God almighty. Some of these guys do look huge, and when you see them in the ring, looks like a mismatch, and then all of a sudden it isn't a mismatch, you know. But you don't know, you know, some guys just look big. And they weigh the same thing. It amazes me. I don't know. There was a middleweight in the 50s, late 50s, Rory Calhoun, 160-pounder. He looked like he weighed 180, you know. He was a monster. Tall too. He wasn't short. He was big, and yet here come a little tiny guy, a little tiny 154-pounder, knocked him silly. I couldn't believe it. I thought he'd crush him. You know, I'm trying to think of that guy's name, but I just don't know when, you know, how the hell you say Hurd looks huge. You know, who looked big to me was the guy that Pacquiao fought.
Jeff Horn?
Yeah, he looked big to me for the weight he was supposed to be. Did he impress you that way?
He's a big welterweight. He's pretty tall and he fills out. He is a big welterweight, and he fights Terrence Crawford next.
Well, you know, I think I would have to pick Crawford. That's why I think we've said this before. You just can't bet against Crawford. But like you say, he is a big damn welterweight, you know? He made Pacquiao look like a midget in here. And yet Pacquiao hung in there with him, you know? I don't understand Pacquiao. He's made of something else. You know, a little tiny guy like that with small bones, small hands, small this, how the hell can he fight them monsters? You know, just their sheer size. They should win on size alone, you know? But, that'd be interesting. There's so many good fights coming up, you don't know what the hell you do first, you know? And this Triple G fight's getting to look good. Triple G looks awful confident.
Mm-hmm.
He got that smile on his face, you know?
Yeah. They're both, they both sound confident that they can knock each other out. And they both say that they see things in the first fight that lead them to believe that they can knock the other out. I can see both of their sides, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? When you
Chris.
Canelo's bigger now than he ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Canelo. I mean, he's right about now. He's a full middleweight.
He's a full.
He had a middleweight fight. He's a full middleweight. Golovkin, basically, they got a draw, and I thought it was a very good call with a draw. Golovkin got a draw with a jab, as simple as that. He didn't land much of anything else except for that jab, but with that jab, he was able to get a draw. And Canelo, he basically got tired early, and he had to play more defense than offense, which Canelo is not used to doing. He's used to having the pace to where he can control it, to where he doesn't necessarily have to set it, but he can control it. When he wants the pace to stop going a certain way, he can control that. He couldn't do that with Golovkin. Golovkin upped the pace with Canelo, made him fight at a pace that Canelo doesn't like fighting at. Canelo, if he sits down on his counters a little more and doesn't see ground as much, I could see him having an avenue of maybe if he has that punch, knocking Golovkin out or hurting him. And with Golovkin, if he does work off of his jab, I mean, the jab is effective. That's step one. Step two is working off the jab. He never worked off the jab in the first fight. Works off the jab this fight, I see a path for him. Go ahead and maybe knocking Canelo out. So, I mean, I see what both guys more or less say.
It wasn't Triple G's best performance, that fight against Canelo. It wasn't his best. It wasn't the best performance for either fighter, I thought. You know?
No.
I think it was setting up a rematch. That's all that thing was. You know? set up a big money, big payday. Don't knock each other out. Don't hurt each other. We'll give you a big rematch. We'll get paid twice, you know, that type of thing. You know, Christ. It was like when De La Hoya fought, gave, what's it called, a fight. And then the guy from Philly hit him with a body punch. It was like hit him in the back. That was one of the great acts of all times, you know, when he went down and said I was paralyzed. Come on, don't give me that BS. Yeah, Bernard, yeah, through the mystery punch. Like, if ever that was a setup, the whole thing was a setup to make it just to collect a payday. You know, I hated that fight. And then that he hit him in the back. Oh, it paralyzed him. Come on, De La Hoya. He's a hell of an actor, you know. That was a bunch of, but anyway, that first fight with Canelo, it reminded me of that fight. You don't know what the hell those guys are going to put on, you know, Bernard and the other guy, you know. So, we'll see.
Guys, we're just up against our clock here. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on again. Always a pleasure to have you on. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And we really appreciate your insight.
Well, there's not much going on up here, Frank. It's just miserable weather. But miserable weather. I mean, it's just, and it's cold out. It's nasty.
Yeah.
It's not nice. Yeah. Not nice at all. Just, I'm you know, I'm getting fed up. I'm really, well, you, Jesus Christ, I had enough of this. You know.
Where are you from?
Well. My son, he wants to move down there. I'm laughing at him. He wants to sell his house up here and move down there and buy a fishing boat. You know, he thinks, you know, he can disappear into non-reality real quick, my son. You know? So I live on a boat. I said, you jackass, we don't need to live on a boat. What's wrong with you? You know, I don't care. I can live on a boat. He loves fishing so much, and he hates cold. He's getting cold weather. So, but it hasn't been nice up here. So,
yeah,
well, he had his operation. I've been taking care of him, you know, and he's by himself up there, but he's been laid up. I mean, laid up. He had a bad hernia operation, you know.
Oh, wow.
So, that doesn't tickle. I had,
no.
You know, that does not tickle. So, but I talked to him tonight. He went out tonight. He's in Philadelphia. With somebody, so he's can't be hurting that bad, you know. So, yeah, must be a good looking woman. They make a lot of pain go away, you know. You know, he's still single, you know. All right, guys. Well, look, we'll see you next week. We'll be able to criticize, you know, ourselves what we felt this week. We'll see. All right, guys, take it easy.
Okay.
All right, bye now.
Chris,
bye. All right, take care.
Z, you want to lead us out?
Oh, man, another wonderful show. Another wonderful show. I want to thank Dr. Chris, as always. I want to thank you, Butch, all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call Butch.
It was great to have Chris back on, and Z, it's always good to have you on and listen to you. I just sit back and listen to you when you break those fights down, and you just have the mechanics down, and it really makes the show go well. So I appreciate that, and we hope to get Ty back on again next week. We know he's off on his special project, but things will come out well with that. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. In grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just take the time to give them a wink, a handshake, or anything. These are very tough times domestically and foreign for both the police, fire, and the men and women of the United States Armed Forces. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, patrolman on Alpha Crispin, Lakeland PD. Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. Delaware State Police Sergeant Rodney Bond. And this is the anniversary of three good friends. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department. And Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department. FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio. Delaware State Trooper Stephen Boward. Yosemite Patrol Officer Matt Baxter. Yosemite Sergeant Sam Howard. Captain Mike Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. We also want to send our very best out to the children of Lieutenant Ardith Hope. Artie was a tremendous runner at Howard High School in Wilmington, Delaware. Had a chance to work with her and as a runner. She has two daughters that go to St. Elizabeth, and they're doing a fantastic job both in track and field as well as on the basketball court. So, girls, we wish you very, very good luck in the state championship. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate all your listeners, and thank you very much. Good night. God bless, and have a great weekend.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yilama.
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Bob, we love you and we miss you.